Welcome to the Sales Enablement Innovation Podcast, brought to you by the Sales Enablement Collective. Each episode, we sit down with sales enablement and revenue leaders from around the world and invite them to share their expertise and experience with the community. On this episode, we spoke to Neha Divakarla, experienced enablement leader and L&D expert, about virtual training sessions and how to make them engaging, effective, and exciting. I hope you enjoy our conversation. On the show today is Neha Divakarla. Neha, thank you so much for coming to the show.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me here, Daniel.
So before we sort of kick things off, could you introduce yourself to our listeners and give some background on your enablement experience, your journey to your current role, and sort of what you're doing now as well?
Sounds good. So I'm a sales enablement and learning expert with about 20 years of experience helping companies and multinational clients in the tech domain. I've worked in telecommunications, financial services, pharmaceuticals, and retail. Throughout my career, I've both been a part of and have led sales enablement and learning and development teams that have supported small sales team in very specific roles to large sales workforces ranging from about 10,000 field sales audiences, 75,000 partners, 8,000 folks in customer experience and success organizations. So I have a lot of experience creating programs at scale, as well as creating very bespoke enablement. In my most current role, I lead the sales enablement content team, supporting the enablement needs of our internal and external sellers for our flagship product offering.
That's a really impressive background, and I think covering loads of really good angles, which is the type of guest we want to get on the podcast, which is awesome. You mentioned sort of learning and development, and how does sort of the learning and development background shape your approach to enablement? Because we hear a lot about the back of so many people come into enablement from sales or from learning and development, all these different places. How does that sort of L&D side shape your approach?
That's a great question. So 20 years ago, when I stepped into the corporate world, I actually started off as an instructional designer. And to date, I still love to think like one. I think coming from an instructional design and a learning and development background is hugely complementary to the world of sales enablement, because what it does, it gives me the best of both worlds. It allows me to take everything that I've learned as an instructional designer and as an L&D professional, take the principles of adult learning, the neuroscience behind how humans learn, take the best practices on addressing different learning styles, aligning to different learning behaviors, finding the right mix of learning modalities on how to address a particular learning gap, and apply it all to the world of sales enablement. And I think this approach is very well received, because what it does, it helps me achieve the needs of sales organization more organically and with more impact, because what I'm doing is I am promising an ROI that is based on proven learning best practices. And on the other hand, my L&D background, it almost immediately allows me to put myself in the shoes of our seller audience and design enablement that is highly relevant for them and that I know will matter to them the most.
That's really interesting. I think especially because sometimes you hear those stories of people who are great sellers who get sort of move into sales enablement, but maybe aren't quite able to resonate with sellers in the same way because they don't have the educational background. So that's really interesting. I think so. Our main topic for today is virtual training sessions and how to actually make them engaging and helpful, sort of with the background that you've had in that. But before we sort of fully dive in, why did you choose to sort of talk about virtual training sessions? Why is that sort of close to your heart?
I think there's a couple of reasons for that. So, I mean, virtually delivered training, I think it has been, and it continues to be one of the most cost-effective ways of sharing information, especially in a sales organization. It is scalable, and it has the potential to reach different roles, expand continents, reach global masses in minutes. However, due to the pandemic, I think, unfortunately, when it was communicating virtually was the only way of communicating, it got a lot of bad rap. I think Zoom fatigue got very real, very fast. Attention spans got even shorter. People continued to attend meetings and just were very exhausted at the end of the day. But now, now that we are 3-4 years after the pandemic and things have opened up, and virtual communication isn't the only way to communicate, I think there's a lot of opportunity to continue to serve our sellers with content and enablement across mixed modalities, virtual training included. I think another good thing that has come out of the whole pandemic situation was the innovation that came in terms of virtual training software. Well, before the pandemic, there were virtual meeting platforms, and they offered your standard suite of features. You know, you're calling in, you've got your video, you've got your standard polling and chats and all that. But now, if you look at it, there's so much more to play around with. You have your virtual 360-degree meeting rooms that you can customize and make them look like you're actually in a room with your colleagues. You've got your avatars and AI companions, you've got your live transcripts, and just so much more. So I think all of that, it has a great potential while used in balance with other forms of learning to continue to make virtual training very impactful, relevant, and very engaging for our seller audiences.
That's really interesting. And you sort of touched on it a little bit as well, but after the pandemic, people are a little bit scared of the idea of virtual training and you know, being put off by the Zoom fatigue that you mentioned as well. What can enablers who are maybe keen to get into the virtual training, how can they get people enthusiastic about these sessions again? How do you sort of dispel the fear that oh, it's just another Zoom session like we had 3 or 4 years ago? How do you build up that enthusiasm from an enablement side?
I think it's in the way of, you know, how we approach it. I think if you're dependent solely on virtual training as a means of communication or as a means of training, I don't personally think that that is the most effective. I mean, we as humans learn in different ways. Sometimes we love to read, sometimes we love to listen, sometimes we love to do something hands-on. So my recommendation is to always mix it up with virtual training included. Maybe have elements of some offline reading built in, maybe have elements of self-paced or just-in-time built in. Definitely follow it up where virtual training makes the most sense, where live interaction are making sense, not just for the sake of having a live interaction, but make the most of it. I think when discussions need to happen or complex topics need to be explained in a way where a live interaction, live gauging of audience reactions are critical, or group work is critical. I think that's where virtual trainings become most relevant, and I think that's where they have the most impact. So what I would say is to not be scared of going the way of virtual. I would advise caution against all virtual. I think it needs to be balanced, it needs to be mixed up.
That does some words of wisdom, and I really appreciate that. Sort of on the back of that, in putting myself in the shoes of a listener who is maybe keen to do this, do you have a sort of framework or a blueprint that you can outline that they can sort of follow your steps? Like, what do you do to make sure that you can run effective virtual training? Do you have a framework, a blueprint, something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I'm thinking of designing a virtual session, I'm thinking about it both in its entirety and its component pieces. So what I do is I love to create what I call an interactivity show flow. So the way to visualize it is think of it as a timeline visual, which calls out the component blocks of the virtual session. So you've got your start, you've got your welcome, you've got your content block. Maybe that's one of the three things that you're going to cover. You've got your content block two, maybe there's a break in between. You've got more content blocks. You've got your summary in the end and closing thoughts. So I'm looking at it in a linear flow, in a linear timeline of sorts. And I'm looking at that overall with the time blocks identified. Okay, 5 minutes for the start. Content block one is going to take me 15 minutes. Content block three is, oh my God, 40 minutes. So I'm looking across that. And what I'm looking for is what I love to call macro and micro engagement interventions. So macro interventions or interactivities, they would typically include your bigger activities like your breakout room exercises and scenarios and role plays and group activities, any gamification that you've got. And they're really subject-based and they do require a lot of thought and preparation in order to be effective. They have to be aligned to the content. They have to actually be needed based on the type of content being taught, right? And then what I look at is the micro engagement interventions. And I think this is where the virtual magic comes in. And this is where I think we have a real opportunity to keep our sellers engaged. I mean, let's face it, people are going to get distracted. There will be an email or an IM message from Slack or Teams or GChat or a text on the phone or a notification from LinkedIn or Insta that pops up on the phone or on your device, or maybe the stretch of training is just too long and they're just bored and they want to look for something to distract them. All of that is going to happen. We cannot assume that, oh, our learners are not going to get distracted. All of that is going to get happen. And there's really no way to stop that distraction from happening. But what we can do is control how that distraction often happens by offering distractions of our own. And I think this is where these micro, what I call micro interactivities come in. I think today's meeting conferencing platforms, they come equipped with a lot of standard features and apps and little tools. So you've got your polling tools, you've got your chat, you've got reactions, which is my personal favorite. You have live two-way annotations where people can come in and, you know, annotate on the field, on the screen, excuse me, and that is for everybody else to see. There's real-time whiteboarding. And all of them, I think when you use them in a combination, they offer a wonderfully creative opportunity to keep sales experts and sellers engaged. And you're using these to offer that distraction. You might want to do them every 2 or 3 minutes or every 5 minutes, depending on the way that your content is engaged. So you could open the session and welcome them as an icebreaker activity. You could use a quick poll to see how interested they are in the session. Or if it's a multi-day session, you could use it to recap points from a previous session. And without explaining what they covered in the previous day, you're using interactivity to help jog their memories. You can use it to check knowledge on the subject to understand, okay, what does my room look like? You know, what is their existing level of understanding on the subject? You can check confidence before and after a topic, like, hey, how many of you have done this before? Or how confident do you feel using this tool, for example? You can do that before and after covering that particular topic. You can use these features as teasers to an upcoming topic, like, hey, so tell me how many of you have used this methodology before, right? And then you jump into the methodology. You can use them as a way during a particularly long session to check interest and relevance. Like, is this making sense to people? You can even use quizzes to check, okay, is the knowledge sticking? Are they understanding what we're talking about? You can use prompts to help people share their experiences, knowledge, and have a little bit more of a live discussion. We all love our slides, our PowerPoint slides, our Google slides, and all of that become a major part of virtual trainings. And when the slides are particularly complex, you can use these interactivities to break up a particularly complex slide, like show of hands. How many of you got it? Do you want me to go in more detail? And finally, you can use them as fun elements. My favorite during the pandemic when we did virtual sessions was, hey, show of hands, be very honest. Who's wearing pajamas right now? And that seemed to lighten up the room almost immediately because we are all in that shared sense of, you know, hey, we're virtual. Yes, a lot of us are dressed in pajamas right now. So it also helps you add a fun element. It's just a break, takes 10 seconds, but then it does offer a distraction from the moment of instruction, from that continuous one-way instruction that is happening over the virtual platform. So I think there's a lot of creative ways that you can do that. And that timeline that I was talking about, I think you can plot it on that timeline. Okay, I'm going to have a poll question here. I'm going to have a chat question here. I'm going to do a raise the hand activity here. Oh, here is my macro activity. So I might use another micro activity to debrief on that. And you can plot it all out. So there's no significant block where you're offering the opportunity for your sellers to get distracted without you controlling that distraction. So that is the blueprint that I love to use on a timeline, what I call the interactivity show flow. And I've used it very successfully over different programs, some of them actually award-winning programs for their virtual engagement. So for us, it has worked really well.
I really, really like that, actually, the idea of positive distractions, because you think of distractions as being a negative thing, like you mentioned people on your phone or Slack or whatever it might be, but actually they can be a powerful tool, like you said there, in a positive manner and keeping people engaged. That's a really interesting perspective that I hopefully that will sort of resonate with the listeners a little bit. You also mentioned one thing about the length of time of the sessions on the timeline. How do you sort of approach the length of time and making sure that do you have a sort of ratio of how many sort of distractions you're going to need and engagement moments in a particularly long session versus a shorter session? How do you think about, I guess, length of time as a whole in sessions? Because like we said, with Zoom fatigue and these sort of things, it's a pretty relevant one. People don't want to be stuck in front of a screen for too long, you know?
Absolutely. I think the one mantra that I love to follow where I can, I know it's not always possible, is to not have too long of training sessions. If needed, you break them over multiple days. Let people come in for multiple days. Let them come in for an hour, maximum 90 minutes. I think once it starts to go beyond 90 minutes, which I personally think is the limit, your micro and macro interactivities will not work. They will find their own distractions. Other things will happen, right? If they're working in an office, people will start to come in. There will be other distractions. They're working from home. There will be other things that will take away their attention. So I think at a maximum, I love to look at it as a 90-minute session. If it can be shorter, amazing. Now, in terms of interactivities, I've said, you know, depending on the type of content it is, sometimes it is heavy content. You know, you're talking about concepts that may be brand new to people. It requires a lot of attention, a lot of engagement. You might want to do something every 3 to 5 minutes. I know that sounds a lot when you think about it like that, but when you actually put it into practice, you'll realize how fast people get distracted. Like today, the attention spans are crazy. Our attention spans are actually lesser than that of goldfish these days. No, it's measured not in minutes, it's measured in seconds. So I love to look at it in terms of the complexity of the content, the duration, and giving people enough breaks. I mean, there's no right or wrong answer. I think it needs to make sense based on who your audience is, what their familiarity with the subject matter is. Is it a one-way training session like a webinar, or is it a two-way training session, meaning they have an opportunity to raise their hand and have some live collaboration? But if I have to give an average, I would say plan for a micro interactivity every 3 to 5 minutes. I think that probably is a good benchmark. And if possible, you know, if you have a macro interactivity, do it every 20 minutes or so. I think that gives people enough to keep them busy, keep them engaged, keep them focused on the session, because if they're missing on those things, you know, they'll know that they're missing out on the content, right? So I've seen that implemented very successfully. In fact, in one of our award-winning training sessions on financial acumen, very heavy subject, we did ask our attendees after the session to rate how we kept them engaged and the types of interactivities we used. And we got a really, really good score. It was on one of the highest ends that we had ever seen. So they liked the opportunities to stay engaged that we provided to them. So we've seen that it works, and it is a proven way of keeping them hooked into the content.
That makes a lot of sense. I really like that 3 to 5 minutes as a sort of the benchmark. In terms of, again, from a listener's perspective, they're hearing this and they like the idea of a timeline and sort of putting that together and building out these virtual sessions. What are some of the more sort of common challenges or missteps that people should be prepared for if they're sort of trying to run these virtual sessions in this way? And what are the sort of things maybe that you've had to overcome to make sure that they can be as good as possible? What should people be ready for, really?
I think the first one is how you're planning your virtual session. I know that's not always within the hands of sales enablement team. Sometimes you have to do a half day virtual training because you can only get your sales folks away from doing their actual job, which is selling, for half a day. That's fine. But where you can, I think going back to my earlier point, don't make them too long. Offer them breaks. Give them opportunities for a mental respite to clean their palate. And, you know, just be in the moment from a training standpoint. So where possible, I think my first advice would be to not make them too long. Spread them over multiple days if possible. Spread them across the day if possible, right? I've seen that being done as well. The second one would be, I know I've talked a lot about macro interactivities and micro interactivities, but don't overdo them either, because then what's going to happen is it's going to have an opposite effect, right? People might think you're hand-holding them too much. If you're adding them, space them out well. Like, give people time to do something, go back, learn through that one-way instruction that is happening over their laptop, then come back to something else and add variety to the questions. Don't keep asking them poll questions or all chat questions. Think about all the features that are available across the spectrum of whatever virtual conferencing or training software you're using, and think about how they can be used in the best way to make the training more robust. And again, these interactivities, make sure that they're not forced, that they're actually complementing the content and objectives of the training, right? So it's actually serving two purposes. you're bolstering, you're taking that content and increasing its strength, its stickiness, its retention by using these interactivities while also offering a controlled distraction. So make sure that whatever interactivities are being added, they're not there just for the sake of it, that they actually add to the objectives of the training. So that would be my second one. The third one, and I think the most important one, would be don't underestimate the power of doing a test run or a dry run. Even if you're doing it with instructors, don't just test out the flow of instruction, but test out every single interactivity. Sometimes something feel great when we put them down on the paper or inside a PowerPoint slide, but when you actually play them out, they may feel like, oh, that's overdone, or no, there was more gap here, or it could have been something different because now we are looking at how the instructors are explaining it. So you'll see a lot of tweaking and fine-tuning will happen during the dry run. So don't underestimate the power of doing a dry run before the actual training. And I think finally, and this probably is a well-known best practice, is have multiple people from the sales enablement team be available to help out during the live session. So have a role for individuals. Person A, you're monitoring the chat and the live Q&A and are continuing to respond to questions that are coming in. You're keeping people engaged on that front. Person two is helping launch all the poll questions or reaction questions and the prompts that are needed for it. Person three is helping the instructors, making sure that all the videos are working. The handoff, if there's multiple speakers or instructors, the handoffs are seamless. There's nobody suddenly unmuting their audio and causing an accidental distraction. Well, that has happened, right? So there's a third person who's on that crowd control and, you know, making sure that the basic etiquettes of the meeting are being observed. So you will need, when you have more interactivities, it also means more hands-on operational work. And it is not a one-person job, for sure. In my experience, when we've had sessions anywhere from 1 hour to 90 minutes, we've had at least three people doing different jobs, because you do need to keep an eye on everything and making sure that everything is running smoothly. So I think those would be my top four things to be mindful of. Those can be easy traps to fall into. You may have some of the best things prepared, but if you're not there, if you're not available, or if you're not staffed to support them in the live session, I think some of that impact you'll see will fizzle out very soon.
That makes a lot of sense, and much appreciated for sharing. And the next question, I think, follows up quite well in terms of, you mentioned a couple of metrics in terms of award-winning programs as well. Measuring return on investment is always a pain point for enablement. We talk about it all the time in the community, and it's something that, you know, people really strive for. What sort of metrics do you use to sort of highlight the success of these virtual sessions to leaders, to within your own team? Sort of what makes a good session a successful session to you in terms of metrics?
I think there are several that, you know, we've tracked successfully over time. I know it's super hard to say when enablement has moved the needle from a revenue standpoint. We love to call ourselves revenue influencers. But overall, you know, in terms of metrics, there's a few. I typically start off with registration and attendance to see, you know, okay, if there were 500 people who were supposed to have joined, how many registered and how many actually showed up. So that's one metric that's almost our go-to. The second one, and I mentioned this before, is measuring confidence before and after. Now, this can be done at a session level where you're asking those questions before the session and at the end of the training session. It could be done at a topic level too, if you're covering a bunch of topics, if it's a multi-day training, because what you're trying to do is understand, oh, based on these skills or these information areas that we're trying to teach, we want to know how this training has moved the needle on that confidence. Some people may rate, oh, I don't feel confident at all, or I have some confidence, and they might rate themselves very differently after the training session in terms of, I feel very confident that I can do this. So I think that is a great measure that is a direct indicator of the success of the training. And it also serves as a feedback back to the enablement teams when somebody rates us the opposite way. Like, oh, don't feel confident and continue to not feel confident. That means that there's something that was missing. We need to do better, right? Maybe we did not meet the objective. So that is almost working in a two-way fashion, giving very relevant topic-specific feedback back to the enablement team. So I love to do that. And then another, this was the best practice that I mentioned earlier as well, just having some sort of short quizzes that are sprinkled throughout the session. I think after each topic, as you're testing your seller's knowledge, just having something like that, it only takes 10 seconds, right? But that can very easily, almost instantly tell you how many people got it right. And I think very similar to confidence, that gives you a very real-time measure of, okay, 50 people participated and about 40 of them got it right. So, you know, that's good, but you know, maybe we need to do something better. Maybe there was a question that some of them didn't get right. And as instructors, you know, real time, they can focus a little bit more time on it. But I still, at the end of the training session, love to look at those poll results collectively and see, okay, what did our knowledge scores look like throughout the session? Did we do well? Did our sellers do well? So that's number three. And then your standard post-session surveys, which is, you know, tracking your NPS, the Net Promoter Score, or customer satisfaction, content relevance, instructor expertise. And my little tip is I love to do these surveys live. I do not give these surveys out after the session has ended. So we almost always bake around 5 minutes before the training has ended and before we actually have covered any summaries or call to actions, any resources, because people are still there. They know there's more content to come. They're not leaving yet. So giving them that survey right there and then, well, it increases participation. And we've seen that we've gotten a lot of more relevant feedback compared to doing it after the fact, where maybe 20% people respond, and sometimes their responses are not as accurate or not as reflective of their actual experience in the training session. So doing them live in the session where possible is a great best practice to follow. But those surveys actually give us a lot of the metrics. And my final one, and this is more subject dependent, is when there's more complex training, say you're teaching a particular skill, you're teaching negotiation, or you're teaching prospecting, or you're teaching CXO conversation skills, where there's a lot of time investment and money investment, because maybe you've got an outside vendor coming in and doing those trainings, we would want to show a higher return on investment than these metrics would give us. In those cases, we would typically track seller-specific metrics, like bookings or pipeline. Did people who take this training do any better than those who did not? Was there a positive change in the deal size? If the training is on prospecting, did the people who take the training have more customer acquisitions over time than those who did not? So aligning it directly to some of those seller milestones, that has also given us a lot of great metrics in terms of return on investment and how successful the entire enablement initiative has been.
That's really fascinating. And I was actually going to ask, and you beat me to it, in terms of after the fact that you're looking at these sort of seller metrics, which is really interesting. I think we're coming up to time, but before we go, I want to ask you, if our listeners could take just one thing away from this episode, what should it be? What's the golden nugget, the secret to great virtual sessions, in your opinion?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So virtual sessions, personally, I feel like are a great enablement tool. And when used right and in balance with other modalities, virtual sessions, they check all the boxes in terms of low cost, low effort, high speed, and shorter time to market for critical information that our sellers consistently need. Now, people will get distracted. We cannot eliminate that, but it is absolutely within the power of us sales enablement experts to control that distraction by offering our own means of distraction. So that is what I would say, you know, don't fear offering your own means of controlled distractions to allow your learners, allow your sellers to get the maximum out of your virtual training. I am sure that it will go a long way in keeping your sellers engaged and hooked into the training content.
Neha, thank you so much for coming onto the show. That is brilliant wisdom. I've learned a lot, and I'm 100% sure our listeners will have as well. Really appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks for having me, Daniel. It was wonderful being here.
Thanks for tuning in to the Sales Enablement Innovation Podcast. Be sure to follow us on your podcast platform of choice so you don't miss a thing. And if you're hungry for more sales enablement content, visit our website, salesenablementcollective.com, for articles, events, and an easy way to join our Slack community, home to thousands of your sales enablement peers.